We're crossing now to Taipei to William Yang. Good afternoon, as it is there, William.
Hi, Karen. How are you?
How are you doing? How's the afternoon in Taiwan?
It's pretty good. Good sunny weather over here for the past week, so can't complain.
Very good. And let's start with Taiwan. You're partially lifting restrictions on the entry of foreign visitors, and that starts on the 1st of March.
Right, so that's more than a year after Taiwan basically imposed a self-restrained lockdown over the border. Even though most of the foreign visitors are still need to go through the two-week quarantine, but Taiwan is starting to allowing people with coming with business or professional purposes to apply in advance with the government. And then during the quarantine, if they're coming from countries of low risk, for example, I think New Zealand and Australia, if they can apply for testing on day 5 or day 7 during the quarantine and the test result comes back negative, they can leave the quarantine immediately. So that's already like a big improvement when it comes to like the tight lockdown that we have seen over Taiwan's border over the last year.
Brian's probably asked you this before, but what are the quarantine facilities like there?
So most of the quarantine places are hotels that have already signed contracts with the government, and all their procedures and policies have been very strictly reviewed by the government before they were allowed to start hosting the arriving passengers. And then at the airport, usually passengers or tourists or like incoming homecoming citizens will be allowed to choose the hotels in advance, either before they arrive in Taiwan or when they arrive at the airport. And then there will be a direct, like either a taxi or designated vehicle that will drive the person directly to the hotel rather than like stopping anywhere to prevent the risk that anyone who might actually still carry some coronavirus with them will have the chance to spread it to other parts of the society or the country. So this has been the protocol for the last year, and there's no sign that this is going to change. But what's going to change is the amount of people that will be allowed to come into Taiwan over the next few months.
How many is the country expecting? Do you think there'll be a big influx?
There's likely going to be an influx of business people, especially because we know that there are still a lot of Taiwan's like companies or corporations are still doing a lot of businesses with other countries. And so we will definitely be expecting some arrivals from countries like Japan, Australia, the U.S., which traditionally does do quite some businesses with Taiwan.
And are people worried about this shorter quarantine period or think that it's the right thing to do now?
So right now, the main debate in Taiwan's society is the timeline for rolling out the vaccine and versus when is the most suitable time for the government to really start easing the restrictions at the border. Because as we know, Taiwan still has just a little bit more than 1,000 cases after more than a year of the coronavirus outbreak. And people here are usually very hypertensive when it comes to any new cases that are being spotted locally. So we will have to wait and see whether this ease restriction at the border is going to maybe create loopholes in the system or not. But so far, it seems like the government is guaranteeing and reassuring people that they have everything in their hands and they are very they are going to be able to adapt and be flexible whenever a new outbreak happens.
Well, let's hope they're right. A very similar situation, isn't it, to New Zealand?
Right.
Now, let's talk about Beijing, because you've been busy today reporting on politics-related news coming out of Hong Kong, and this is to do with Beijing's most senior official, and this gentleman is overseeing Hong Kong affairs, and he's been laying down the standards expected of patriots who should rule Hong Kong. What's his definition of a patriot?
So a patriot is someone who will be willing to pledge allegiance to serve the Hong Kong's local constitution and also the Hong Kong government, which now, in most cases, people view the Hong Kong government as an extension of the Beijing government because most of the policies and the chief executive herself is in fact approved by Beijing before she is allowed to run in any election. And over the last year and a half, we have already seen the Hong Kong government, time and time again, siding with Beijing's interests rather than the voices of the Hong Kong society. So, this new regulation is yet another blow to Hong Kong's already fragile and like shrinking political space for especially the pro-democracy camps. In last month, we saw that more than 53 members of the pro-democracy camp's political personnels or they were arrested for simply participating in a self-held primary before the postponed legislative council election. And then this new rule, when it comes out, it's basically like hammering out all the so-called oppositions that traditionally do not share the same view and value with the Chinese government, which means that these are mostly politicians who used to champion and advocate freedom and democracy. And after the new regulations and the outline that outlines who constitute and what like constitutes the quality of a patriot, it is basically that any only people that agree or like share the same values as Beijing will be allowed to be running in elections. And a lot of the people told me that they think this is basically closing off all the spaces for people to be able to like join the election or the local public institutions and continue the resistance against Beijing.
Yes, we often speak to Tom Grundy from the Hong Kong Free Press, and they have to tread a very fine line when it comes to Beijing and what they're reporting. And I see that the rules that were set out today that you're talking about for patriots who rule Hong Kong, they were in a panel discussion, and they're quite explicit. Number one, saying do not engage in activities endangering national security and sovereignty. Well, we've heard that coming out of Beijing. But this one, do not attack the central government in a hysterical manner or advocate Hong Kong independence. That's quite specific, isn't it?
Right. These are the conditions that have already been talked about or even applied to specific individuals since the National Security Law came into effect in July last year. This is essentially banning all kinds of messages that is trying to challenge the authority of Beijing or like individuals who try to convince foreign governments to impose sanctions on Beijing for policies or things that they don't agree with or that they see as infringing on Hong Kong's remaining civil liberties. So when all these regulations or rules or like criteria are now being applied to local political like filtering, this is essentially going to create a whole institution at all levels, political institutions at all levels that will be without a genuine opposition, according to all the opposition figures that have been trying to still have some faith in Hong Kong's elections and political system. But they think that after Monday's speech, it is essentially announcing that Beijing is now going to take full control over vetting through people that are allowed to stay in Hong Kong's political system.
Yes, you'd have to say that's absolutely right. The language used too, it's probably perhaps lost in translation, but do not beg for foreign sanctions against Hong Kong and love China.
Right, exactly. And the idea of loving China or the being patriotic is central to the Chinese Communist Party's ideology when they first came into power and then when they enforced their ideologies across China. The idea of patriotism is essentially don't fight or don't challenge the central government's authority and just obey whatever that they roll out. So we see that dissidents in China have been facing very harsh treatment and oppression over the last few decades. And now this similar treatment is likely going to come to Hong Kong.
And William, on another subject in business, Taiwan is making quite a lot of money out of semiconductors. Well, let's start with the basics. You probably know what they are, but what is a semiconductor?
So semiconductor is essentially like microchip makers or manufacturers that will be able to produce the chips that basically will be used in all kinds of different scenarios in cars and computers, in cell phones, or in more like advanced systems like quantum computing or AI or 5G. So all kinds of technology are nowadays rely on a very small, tiny chip that is going to power and allow the like these machines or these technologies to facilitate or perform the like things that we wish that they will be able to do. And one company, TSMC in Taiwan, has been one of the world's largest manufacturer of these kind of chips, and it also has some of the world leading technologies in this. And as some of you may have already know, over the last few months, Germany, like automakers in Germany and the US, have been experiencing serious shortage in these chips because of the rising demand of people buying cars due to the ongoing pandemic. So Germany and the U.S. have actually, the government have reached out to Taiwan on behalf of the companies to seek support to supply more chips. But so Taiwan's importance in this global supply chain has suddenly become very important. The latest report shows that Taiwan's semiconductor industry also hit a record high revenue last year that is like just another sign that experts are believing that this trend is going to carry over to 2021.
What are we talking about in terms of money, William?
Like hundreds of billions. That was the amount that Taiwan's semiconductor industry was able to make last year. That's in US dollars. And they are expecting either similar like amount of revenues or even higher because of the demand, and also the fact that the U.S. government is now launching a national or even global campaign or that's going to try to secure a supply chain for all the industries that will need or rely on the chips inside the U.S.
Just as a matter of interest for those who are coming out of school or high school there, is computer science and the IT industry one of those industries that's coveted to go into?
Yes, exactly. These are traditionally and still are some of the most popular industries or the subjects for young graduates to go into. And then Taiwan has a long tradition of highlighting and celebrating its success in the tech industry over the last few decades. So this is certainly another moment that will convince likely the incoming students or their parents that going down the path of electronic engineering or related fields of study in Taiwan will still have a bright future, at least over the next few decades.
Yes, I've got the figures in front of me here. I can't believe it. The output value of Taiwan's semiconductor industry, thank you for telling me what that is, in 2020 topped $3 trillion. That's incredible. That's US $107.53 billion for the first time ever.
Right.
That's such a huge amount of money coming into the country.
Right. And interestingly, most of the revenues are essentially made up by TSMC, as I talked about, and another smaller chip maker. So imagining like two companies that are going to basically create the revenues or the amount of the economic value in Taiwan, that's more than half of the national revenue or the economic values are coming from these two companies. That, again, shows how important TSMC's role is in the global semiconductor supply chain.
What are some of the other industries in Taiwan that are increasing in growth during COVID or have maintained during this time? What are some of your big industries there?
So renewable energy is an up-and-coming and very popular area for especially foreign investment. We already see Denmark's some of the top renewable energy companies in Denmark are coming to Taiwan and actually investing in like multi-year projects here. And we are also actually seeing the rise of a software industry that's traditionally not really Taiwan's like stronghold, but the heavy interest and investment of human capital into the tech industry overall is now highlighting the need for Taiwan that it not only needs to have a very abundant amount of tech hardware talent, it also needs to start developing its own tech software talent. So in the long run, Taiwan could potentially become self-sufficient when it comes to having both the hardware and software talents that can form a very strong ecosystem for to support Taiwan's role and highlight Taiwan's importance in the global arena.
Gee, very interesting. Thank you very much, William. Well, it's coming up to 5 o'clock, I believe, now where you are in Taipei. Have you got any plans for the evening?
Just a quiet evening, you know, waiting for tomorrow's Friday to come and waiting for the weekend. But it has always been a pleasure to be on the show.
Oh, very good. It's great to talk to you. Thanks very much, William.
Thank you.
It's a correspondent in Taipei, William Yang.